Hey, this is Matt Hawkins, and you're listening to the Top Cow Chronology Project.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Presents the Top Cow Chronology Project. I'm your co-host, Jace, here with Jaden.
Hey there.
And in this episode, we're going to be talking about The Darkness, Shadows, and Flame. So, for those of you not familiar with the Top Cow Chronology Project, what it is, me and my co-host read each book in the Top Cow Artifact universe in order. And that's not a publication order, that's in chronological order. So, for example, the first issues of the chronology are way back in ancient Egypt, and then we're going to read each book as it goes forward through time, and hopefully someday finish up this monster of a podcast. So, if you want to take a look at that chronology, which was compiled by a user named Condor on the ComicVine website, you can go to our website, which is thecomicsourceblog.com. And if you've been to our site before, you'll notice that we have a few changes. Instead of the Top Cow Chronology page, you're going to go to the podcast page. Because Jaden and I have actually launched another podcast, which is more of a general comics podcast. That way, when we have special events, like we're covering a convention or we have creator interviews, we don't have to take a break from the chronology and do a special podcast. We can just continue with the three episodes of the Top Cow Chronology per week. And this other podcast will be once a week, probably come out late Sunday night or sometime on Monday. And we can have all our convention coverage and special episodes there. So getting back to what I was saying about the Chronology Project, if you go to the podcast page on our website, you'll see off to the right, there's a ComicVine logo. If you click on that, that'll take you to the ComicVine website where you can see user Condor's Top Cow Chronology that we use, and that'll give you an idea of what books are coming up next, if you want to purchase them ahead of time, or you can wait and hear what we have to say and buy them later if they sound good, whatever you want to do. So, as I mentioned, the book we're going to talk about tonight is The Darkness, Shadows and Flame. It was published in 2010. Writer, Rob Levin. Penciler, Jorge Lucas. Also inked by Jorge Lucas. The colorist was Felix Serrano. And the letterer was the great Troy Pateri. And that was actually January of 2010 that this one-shot came out. So what did you think of the book, Jaden?
Overall, I'm not a huge horror comic fan, but I thought it was pretty decent. There's definitely things I liked about it. I'm not a huge fan of this darker style of art, but I think it definitely fits the book really well.
Yeah, there were things I liked about it. I mean, right off the top, the very first words you see on the top of the cover are Lovecraftian horror. Mm-hmm. And I can see that. It was, how can I put this, a different interpretation, I guess you'd say, of what the Darkness Bearer looks like. Never seen him look so much like some kind of monster from the pit with all the tentacles and multiple eyes. You know, we'd never seen that sort of version of him before. And I definitely would say this was a dark story and as you said, a horror. So overall, it just felt a little weak to me. Certainly not one of my favorite stories that we've gotten so far. Really, sometimes I wonder if maybe the reason that I'm not enjoying these darkness stories as much as, say, like the Witchblade stuff is because when Manny and I, our other co-host, first started the Chronology Project, we started with the first 8 issues of Witchblade, which really gave us kind of a good introduction, even though it was set more in, you know, modern times, or the 90s, actually, when it was published. It was, you know, the first 8 issues of this new concept of the Witchblade, so it took some time to kind of explain, you know, what the Witchblade was. And so coming at it from this perspective of reading them in historical order, rather than reading the first few issues of the Darkness, which I imagine give kind of an introduction to what the Darkness is, these other historical issues that we're reading, I don't have that much context. You know, I still don't really understand what the Darkness is. You know, I know it's one of the artifacts in the Top Cow universe. I know it gives the bearer, which apparently is passed down from father to son in the Estacado family. It gives the bearer the ability to summon demons from some other realm. And it seems like sometimes they can only be out at night and, you know, various other things. But I still feel like I don't really have a good grasp, good context, I guess, for some of these stories. So it may be that after we learn a little bit more about what the Darkness is, that I look back on some of these early historical Darkness issues a little more favorably.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, do you feel like you have a good grasp of what the Darkness is yet, or?
No, not necessarily, but I think that this, I don't know, it's something about the story, I liked it. I think it's just, I liked the storytelling from panel to panel. It really flowed well to me, and the art just fits it so well that I think it just kind of, even if it is kind of a weaker story, I can kind of just ignore it because it flows decently.
Okay, well, why don't I give the synopsis and then we can talk a little bit more about the merits of the story itself. All right, so right off the bat on the cover, we see this Lovecraftian version of the Darkness, as I said, with a lot of tentacles and multiple eyes. He's kind of looming over this guy who's sort of on his knees and looks quite scared. We go to the first page. Looks like in town. We see up in the upper left, New England, 1897. Just a beautiful opening splash with the moon over the water and the clouds. The colors give it a sense of foreboding. Just a beautiful panel. And we see that a man named Sal is in a bar. He's being thrown out. They're saying a terrible thing's happened to you, but you have to go. And then we see some narration. Salvador Gomez thinks himself a man. Perhaps he once won. Once was a man. Now he is less. And then a stranger on the street asks, who is he? The man you're looking for? Does he have a name? Salvador Gomez replies, he's not a man. He's a god. They call him the Shadow God. Apparently he can turn back time. And I lost my family. I must get them back. Trying to change my past. I was in love with a woman. She was different. She was special. The stranger replies that he was in love once with a woman. She was different. She was special. Things got complicated. I had to push her away. It rid myself of the only joy I'd ever known. Sal asked him if he managed to change the past. He said he did, but he knew it was impossible. The only way for us was to be apart. But she died. I was unable to stop it. I thought I was the worst thing in her life, but I was wrong. All I'm certain of is the darkness that dwells inside me, an empty pain where no light will ever shine. Salvador replies that the Shadow God's real. Then the stranger goes on to say the Shadow God's real and powerful, but you cheat your pain, you hide from it, with peyote and illusions poisoning your mind. Apparently, Sal is trying to kind of numb himself from the pain of losing his family through peyote and drink and such things. Whereas Sal disagrees with the stranger, he says that the peyote helps him see the truth of the world. And the stranger replies that you'll only see what you want, you'll only see the Shadow God if you turn from this path. Sal wanders off. And he goes to a home which looks badly burned and dilapidated. He walks up a flight of stairs that has apparently been burned. There's only like 4 stairs and the rest looks like it's fallen into the basement. Meanwhile, the narration continues to say that Sal's not slept in a year. And the deceptions of the drug he takes almost allow him to sleep. But what they certainly do is they give him a different view of what the past looked like. For certain, what the drugs do is allow him to see himself differently in the past, differently on the next page. We see him approaching the house and it's on fire. He's yelling for Leticia, his wife. She's at the top of the stairs in their daughter's Rita's room. They're trapped. Please help us. The narrator goes on to say that the view Salvador has of the past paints himself as a savior. He attempts to go up the stairs, but the stairs collapse. And he runs outside as his wife and daughter are burned alive, basically. The next page, kind of a surreal image. Salvador is distraught, remembering life with his wife and daughter. And the narration says, what he now wants was once his to lose. His choice has sealed his fate. So it seems like the narration is saying that he had everything he wants now, but he didn't appreciate it when he had it. And the narration goes on to say there's no change in the past. Right now there's only tomorrow. And right now is the only tomorrow any man will ever have. So the following night, you see that Salvador is waiting in an alley near the same saloon he was thrown out of the night before. He sees the stranger walking along the street. He goes up to him, pulls a knife, holds it to his throat, says, you'll take me to your shadow god now. And the stranger said it would be wiser to leave this alone. Salvador, but he leave me little choice. And then he asks him, why did you leave your house standing? I mean, why not tear it down? And Sal says, because I can't not bear the thought of forgetting. So they go to the beach, and the stranger says, listen to me very closely. The shadow god will test you for the next 7 days. You'll not see the sun, only the night in shadows. And this last part is the most important. No matter what comes out of the darkness, you mustn't back down. You mustn't turn away. If you refuse to face the darkness, he will not show. You will be stuck with the past you have now. And he says this as he's drawing a kind of a, would you say like a rune in the sand, yeah. Kind of a mythical design.
Yeah.
And Sal says, I know you've done it under duress, but you've done me a great service. What do I call you? And he replies, my name is Teo. Thank you, Teo. I'm sorry for what I've done. And then apparently Sal waits for 7 days in the darkness. And he hears the voice of the narrator in his head telling him to run, act in a manner befitting every cowardice, flee. But he remains throughout all the horrors that he sees, and finally the darkness appears. This Lovecraftian, Cthulhu-looking version of the darkness, and asks him, why have you endured? He says that he lost his family, his wife, and his daughter. And I was told you can change the past, is it true? And the darkness monster replies, you've seen merely the precipice of what I can do. And he takes him back to his house. And it apparently, before it was burned, it looks whole. And tells him, this is your moment, Salvador. Is this not what you desire? And he's kind of walking around his house, seeking redemption. And he walks into the room where his wife and daughter are. Daughter is about to go to sleep, and the darkness monster asks Salvador, where were you that night? And he says, I don't understand. He says, do you not? And the scene shifts to outside the house. Looks like it's Salvador. He's carrying a lantern, and he strikes a match from the bottom of his shoe and lights the grass around his own house, and then throws a lantern through the window. And the darkness monster replies, you've caused more agony than just this, and drags him up the stairs as the house is burning to see the agony of his wife and daughter. He says, see them, know their fear. And Salvador says, why will you not let me help them? I tried, but the stairs. The darkness monster replies, you did nothing. You sought to return to the past. This is the truth. You are a coward.
steamships back to the destroyed house. The Darkness wants her to tell Sal to beg for forgiveness. And he says, I beg you, forgive me. But the monster replies, not from me, beg them for your salvation. And he shows him his wife and daughter. Salvador breaks down in tears. I'm so sorry for giving my angels. I don't know what happened. I love you both so much. And the monster says that despite all he saw this night in this flashback, he still does not realize the entirety of his mistakes. He says, do not lie to them. You broke your vows. And his wife says, why, Sal? And she's now joined by a third woman, a blonde woman. And Sal says, I don't know. As the three women burst into some green spiritual flame and start to decay, Sal says, can you not do something for them? And the Darkness monster replies, I'm not a god, and I can't change the past. And he shows Sal his human face, and it turns out that it's Teo, the stranger that led him here. He goes on to say that Leticia was the closest he'd ever got to anyone. It was the woman he was talking about on the first page, the woman that he had to push away because he thought he was the worst thing in her life. So apparently Teo was the person destined to inherit the darkness. Because of that, he had to leave Leticia. Teo goes on to say she was supposed to meet a better man, the kind of man that would protect her above all else. But you threw it all away, Sal, for nothing. For a whore, a life with a woman that should have been mine, the daughter I could never have. And Sal replies, but I didn't kill Alexandria, who is the blonde woman. And Taylor replies, I know, but I did. He again repeats, I'm not a god, I can't raise the dead, but I can only decide who joins them. And once again, Sal asks for forgiveness, and Teo, the Darkness Bearer, replies, this is my forgiveness, and basically tears him apart with the help of the women, spiritual women, who are apparently demons in the realm that the darkness draws from. And then we see it's daybreak, and Teo's on the hill overlooking the town. He says he thought today would feel different, but he finds no comfort in vengeance. Perhaps one day he'll find solace out of the shadows. And it ends.
So, interesting story. Definitely one of vengeance. It was a little confusing with the dark palette that was used, and honestly the rendering of Teo and Sal looked very similar, which isn't necessarily surprising. I mean, a lot of men back then in the late 1800s would be wearing very similar styles of clothing. One has facial hair, one doesn't, so that helps you'd be able to tell them apart, but there are some panels where one or the other is in shadow and the other will have their back turned. So there were a few pages I had to reread a couple times. Honestly, I'm not a big fan of Lovecraftian horror, as I said earlier. So I'm not a huge fan of this version, this rendering, or I don't even know what you want to call it, this way the Darkness Bearer is presented here, the way Teo looks with the tentacles and the eyes and such, doesn't really do it for me. I much prefer the more traditional look of the darkness. I would agree with that the storytelling from panel to panel and some of the action scenes is handled well. I would say as far as the art goes itself, there's not a lot of clean lines, but it actually works for the mood they're trying to set. But for me, the best part of the art is the color. The coloring's done really well. It really sets a good mood. It makes it sufficiently creepy and dark. But you know that this color artist definitely has skill, because there's a few panels, like on the last page, where, as I said, the sun is rising. It's much brighter, and it really helps to set the mood. And also on that very first panel on the first page, it's done exceptionally well. The kind of dark moodiness of the town in the foreground, but there's some real brightness in the sky where the moon's peeking through the clouds. So some really beautiful blues contrasting with the
dark blacks and grays. So, yeah, for me, it's all about the color in this art.
Yeah, I really like page 11. I think that's my favorite page on this in this book.
Take a look at page 11. Really?
Yeah, I like this, the one panel, the splash.
Yeah.
Of the darkness. Yeah, I think it fits the book really well. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Lovecraftian horror either, but I think that the way, with the tone that they're going, I think that that page pretty much sums up the darkness in this story.
I would agree with that. It's a good representation. So this page 11, we see Sal standing on the beach. The rune that Teo created is in the sand in front of him, glowing green. And he's kind of looking out toward the ocean. And over the ocean and the sky are what looks to be hundreds and hundreds of demons, darkness demons, I suppose. But they all have a very Lovecraftian look and feel to them. Definitely the thing of nightmares, I guess you'd say.
So one other thing I would say is the dialogue, while not cheesy, it certainly doesn't necessarily fit the period.
Yeah, I could see that.
But, you know, I think that's okay. And this is, you know, a modern book. I'm kind of looking back, but I don't know that it necessarily needs to be in the dialect and the tone. I mean, I'd rather have it be this kind of modern language than to have them try to do a dialect or more old-time English to suit the period and have it be done badly.
Yeah, definitely.
That would have, you know, pulled us out of the story, whereas I didn't even really notice that it was, you know, a much more modern way of speaking until I went back and I was looking over it and thinking about the things I wanted to say when we talked about it. So for me,
yeah.
Probably my least favorite darkness story we've read so far, but definitely my favorite in terms of color. I mean, I even as I'm looking through the pages now, the color is just so good. I mean, look at page 13. That big splash that takes up the top, I don't know, 2/3 of the page. You've got the darkness monster finally showing up, you know, looking very Lovecraftian with the green and the orange glowing eyes and the darkness of that. But it's contrasted with that bright moon in the background. You have these dark, ominous clouds.
Just done really, really, really well.
Yeah, I think the color palette in this is definitely really cool. It's mostly, there's hardly any color besides green and orange until the last page, pretty much.
Yeah, just a little.
You hardly ever get any skin color.
Yeah, really cool. I mean, the art is really done well also. You know, it's not just the color. The artist definitely allowed the, you know, the color to shine through with the layouts. I guess you'd say the layouts are done extremely well also.
Yeah, and that colorist that I'm singing the praises of is Felix Serrano, just to remind you, and the pencils and inks were Jorge Lucas. So definitely a decent read, but not at the top of my list for darkness books. If you do want to read it, it is available in trade. It's actually in Darkness Accursed trade paperback, volume 4. That collects issues 80 to 84 of the Darkness, volume 3, and then it also has this one shot. It's also available on Comixology for $1.99, or you can go to eBay and the single issue. I think I saw one on there for 99 cents, another one for like $1.50 plus shipping. And the next book we're going to cover is The Darkness, Close Your Eyes, another Darkness one-shot. It's also available on Comixology for $1.99. There's lots of single issues available on eBay for about $3 each. It hasn't been collected in a trade, so you're limited to those two choices, or maybe you can find it at your local comic shop. Just came out last year, almost exactly a year ago, actually. June 4th, 2014 was the release date, so
Once again, we want to thank you for joining us.
Yep, thanks.
Be sure and go and check out our website. You can see Manny's blog there. You can check out other episodes of our Top Cow podcast. You can check out our Comic Source podcast. Of course, we have the Sketch Gallery. We'll have a convention page up soon, especially with the big San Diego Comic-Con coming up in a little less than a month. Jade and I will both be attending. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us a line. You can contact us on our website. You can comment on the podcast episodes on their individual pages in the thread, or contact us through the contact us link. You can contact us directly through email. Our email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. I'm always talking to comic creators on there, talking about good books as they come out each Wednesday, tweeting about conventions and all kinds of crazy stuff, retweeting awesome art from artists like Todd Nock, and talking to Jimmy Palmiotti and Nicola Scott and things like that. So you can get a lot of information from our Twitter. You can also follow our Facebook page. I update that frequently with all our latest episodes and throw convention pics and sketch pics on there also. Just do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook, and that's us. And I guess that's going to do it for this episode. So be sure and join us next time. We'll talk to you then.